is a test of the emergency broadcast system.
This is only a...
Guys, how y'all doing? Welcome to another episode of Two DJs and One Mic. I am the DJ and the mic. I'm here with my buddy and my friend, my pal, DJ JP in the house, and we're blessed to have the great Ross Axelrod. Did I say it right?
Axelrod, yes.
Axelrod, God, right. Axelrose.
And before we jump into the show, we have to thank our sponsor. Curator Live is now the official sponsor for the Two DJs and One Mic podcast. Looking for a perfect photo booth software? Look no further than Curator Live. Tell my man James that we sent you. My.curatorlive.com is the place to find Curator Live for your photo booths and 360s.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Great company.
Yes.
Great tools. Simply wonderful.
Yeah. Also, we have to thank EV for being one of our sponsors also.
So yes.
Big shout out to EV for setting us up with those speakers and letting us do all that good stuff. So, all right, let's get into it, man. We got a great show lined up for tonight.
Right? All right. Well, do your thing, Jeffrey.
All right. Let's get into the... So, at what age did the DJ bug hit you? And how did you go about acquiring your first DJ setup?
That's a good question. DJing kind of fell into my lap when I was around 10 and a half, 11 years old. My camp counselor was a DJ, and I was the only one in the bunk that didn't give him any crap. So he invited me to DJ a camp overnighter with him, and I came out, and he taught me how to use the equipment, gave me $20 for the 2 hours, and, you know, I was like, wow, this is amazing.
A whopping 20.
Yeah, it was a whopping 20. But when you're, you know, 11 years old, that's a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
So you're like, wow, okay. And I kind of got the bug then, because that Monday he asked me, he's like, listen, you know, I could really use some help at other events, and I would love to bring you out. And I was like, great. Now, this is where that $20 turns into something different, because he ended up giving me $20 for a 5-hour wedding the next weekend. And I was like,
okay. It was a setup.
But once again, when you're 11 years old, it's still $20, a lot of money. And
stuff. Oh, yeah.
You know, but I worked with him for about 5 years. He taught me how to DJ. He taught me how to MC, how to run events, so on and so forth. The last year I was with him, I was doing my own events for his company. And then, unfortunately, we parted ways when he brought his brother into the business. But my parents, they said, listen, is this something you want to do? And I was like, yeah. And they said, well, we'll buy you your first set of equipment if this is something you're serious about. And at 16, we drove up to Connecticut to Connecticut Bar and Nightclub Supply Company. And that's where I got my first set of EVs. And amps and all that stuff. Me and my stepfather drove all the way up there from Philly and drove all the way back, and that was the start of my first.
So no DJ stores in Philly?
There were, but you know what? They were giving me such a deal up in Connecticut, it was worth the drive. It was amazing. There was one DJ store here that a lot of the DJs got equipment from, and I'm not lying, they were probably $500 to $600 more on a lot of the items
because
they were the only one. So
they had everybody's attention, and everybody in Philly wanted to be a DJ. Wow. Like supply and demand, it's a beautiful thing. And you kind of hit on the next question, so go ahead.
No, I'm just because I was thinking, as he said, his parents agreed to buy his first setup. You know, and I was wondering in that 5 years, how did your parents feel about you working with the guy and how much he was paying you? You know, how did they feel about that?
Yeah, well, at the beginning, the $20 was $20. But within a year, that was up to $50. And then, the next year was up to $100. And still, like, I'm 12, 13 at this time.
Yeah.
$100 was nice. When I was actually DJing and MCing for him, for his company, without him being present, I was getting, $250, $300. And at the time in 1993, that was amazing. So,
wow.
it was great. And they loved him. He was like a big brother. My parents had gotten divorced. So I was living with my mom and my two brothers. And this guy kind of became like my older brother. He took me to see The Adventures of Ford Fairlane when I was 13 years old, like what an older brother would do. Right. And it was just a nice experience with him. And unfortunately, I just didn't get along with his brother when his brother came into his business. And we didn't talk for a while, but years later, he got back in touch, did some events for me. And we were still close now. We talk every now and then now. So
that's cool. So, well, you answered one of the questions. Do you remember how much you got paid for the first gig? And that is $20.
Yeah.
And how did you feel about that first payment? You felt great, but you didn't know that you were getting abused a little bit.
But a little bit.
When you look at it though, from this point of view, first, let me give a shout out to Alejandro and Alex. When you look at it from this point of view, there's really no amount that you can put on knowledge because of that influence. How many years now, over 30 years, you're in the business.
Yep.
And you're doing something that you have grown a great love for, I would assume. It has to be something that you like, you know. So that experience, man, it's priceless.
Yes.
I agree. I credit him all the time for teaching me everything. And that was like my base knowledge. And obviously when I got out on my own, opened up my own business when I was 16, I had to learn a lot of stuff the hard way. That just comes with the lumps, but he gave me that knowledge, and as you said, it was priceless because it set me up to be a lot more ahead than I probably would have been if I just said, "Hey, I want to be a DJ." And
yeah, wow.
So you mentioned that you had a lot to learn at the tender age of 16. So can you give us some of those examples, or as some people would say, some of the horror stories?
I'll give you a couple different style ones. So the biggest thing I had to learn was how to get clients because he got all the clients. I just did the events. So, I had to learn how to advertise. And back in the early 90s, 94, when I opened up my company, there was no internet. So it was advertising the local newspaper or the local, we did a lot of bar and bat mitzvahs. So there was a local Jewish newspaper. So I had to advertise there. I went into the local newspaper and said, "Hey, I also do these kinds of events and these kinds of events." And it was just a lot of that. It was a lot of doing free things. Like I would cold call organizations, community events, say, "Listen, I'll come out and do DJ for free," because I wanted to get my name out there and just get out there. And that was all stuff I had to learn because I was never taught that stuff. He taught me skills. He taught me how to mix. He taught me how to read a crowd, what music to play. He taught me a lot about music, not just like stuff that I liked stuff. So it was really great from that particular standpoint. But pardon me, the business aspect was stuff I had to learn really quickly and really hard. But if you want a quick little example of something I had to learn on the job as being a DJ, I was doing a bar mitzvah. And, you know, for a bar mitzvah, we go through the timeline. We talk to, you know, the talk to the clients. One of the big formalities is the candle lighting ceremony. And the candle lighting ceremony takes about a half an hour. And, or at least it did back then, because we were mixing everything on record and CD and tape. So we had already talked about, I'd already talked about the timeline with the caterer. We were all on the same page. And in the middle, like three candles into the candle lighting, he comes up to me behind the scenes and he says, "How much longer the food is ready?" I said, "Well, it's not supposed to be out for another 40 minutes because we have this and we have this and we have this that we have to do beforehand." He's like, and he ran off kind of pissed off. About a minute later, in the middle of the kid saying, "Grandma, please come up and light this candle," the guy pulled my plug right out of the wall.
What?
And I was like, "What's going on?" You know, we quickly plugged it back in, got everything going, and started back up again. Literally 3 seconds into the kid talking again, he pulls my plug out again.
This is the caterer?
This is the caterer. And
oh my God.
And I go up to him, and you know, I'm like 16, 17 at the time, right? So, and he's an adult in my eyes. He's like, you know, an adult. So I go up to him, I said, "Well, what's going on? Why do you keep pulling my plug? Because it's gonna damage my equipment if you keep doing that." And he's like, I need to get the food out now." I said, "But we're in the middle of this. Like, I can't just stop and say it's time for food, everybody, and we'll do this again later, you know." And he didn't really give me an explanation. He just kind of yelled and he ran away. Two candles later, pulled the plug again.
Oh my God.
Where are the people that
were the adults?
Yeah. At this point, dad was getting annoyed. Like the dad who had hired me was getting really annoyed. And he knew it was not me or my fault or in any way. And so we got it back up again. I go and talk to the guy. I said, "Listen, you got to give us some time. I might be able to switch some other stuff around, but I need to finish this. And you're causing a scene," and so on and so forth. And so we start up again. 3 seconds later, pulls it right out. This time, before I had a chance to go over, the dad pushed me out of the way, went over and just yelled at him in front of his entire 200 guest event and said, "If you touch that plug one more time, you know, you're going to have to answer to me." He literally went to the payphone, because back then, not cell phones as much. called the maitre d's boss and said, "You better get over here and remove him from my event, or I'm going to kill him," or whatever. And literally half an hour later, the boss showed up. That guy was taken out, you know, told to leave. And the boss was like nothing but a pleasure to work with at that point.
Oh my God.
It
was just like, terrible.
You know, having to learn not to lose my cool in front of 200 people when this guy keeps unplugging my equipment. That's something I was just kind of like boiling, but I'm also 17. And I'm also like, well, I don't know if I can yell at this guy because he's like an adult. And I was told to, you know, respect my elders and stuff. And I'm like trying to be the nice guy. And the dad just, he's like, "Forget it.
Wow.
You're being nice. Let's go."
Wow. So big ups to Casey. Yeah. Thank you, Casey.
So when did you start scaling up? I know you started at 16. So what made you transition and start scaling up?
Well, it actually happened really quick, because that first year I did a lot of those free events and I did a lot of word of mouth things, did a lot of cheap stuff just to get my name out there. And it really started rolling. Probably about a year and a half into owning the company, I was getting calls for the same dates. And I was like, man, I don't want to turn these away. You know, like that's money. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, I don't want to turn it away. So I had a friend of mine who had helped me as a DJ assistant every once in a while. And he had expressed interest in being a DJ and doing events on his own. And I was like, well, if you want to buy equipment, I will be happy to book you on events. And that's kind of how it happened. It just happened with him. And any of the runoff or the overflow I got, I had him do. He was happy because he was paying off his equipment, making extra money. And he was a DJ, and he was a little, he was about my age. So we were, here we are, two 17, 18 year olds going, yeah, we're DJs. We're cool. You know, you know? And he used it to get the girls, you know, and I was like, okay. Well,
I'm trying to be always a girl. Always a girl.
You know, I'm trying to be in business, but, you know, it worked out for the both of us. And then rapidly within 2 years after that, it was clear I needed more people because we were getting such runoff or overflow. I needed multiple people, and it just kind of kept growing from there.
So where are you at now? How many people do you have working for you now?
Well, I have kind of split my company into different divisions now. So okay. I have a wedding division, a mitzvah division, a corporate division, and then we have a division that does a lot of school proms and school of stuff with kids. So on the wedding section, I have about 10 crews, MC and DJs that go out for weddings. Mitzvahs, I have about six. Corporate is just, it's more corporate AV, so it's not a crew per se. It's more just tech people that go out. So we have a bunch of tech people. And then with the proms and stuff like that, I have about four crews that I typically send to large proms and school events. So it's kind of segmented, but it makes it easier for people who are looking for specialization in a particular.
So I have to ask a question. Let me ask you. So did you go to school or did you just keep doing this and you've been doing this since the day you were 11?
I did go to school. My mom made me go to college, you know, because she wanted me to
have a fallback.
Right. Get the 9 to 5. No, she wanted me to get the 9 to 5 and she wanted me to have a job and a career and stuff like she never thought DJing was a career. And when I got out of school, I went to school for business and marketing. So, you know, of course, that's what I was interested in. And I graduated. She made me get a job. But here I am at my 9 to 5 and I'm sitting here just trying, like, this isn't fun. Like, this isn't what I want to do. Like, I didn't want to push, you know, the keyboard buttons and, you know, like, I wasn't doing a really fun job. And it was just, I was getting $27,000 a year. And I'm like, I made more than $27,000 last year DJing. Like, wow. You know, yeah. And so I was just like, after about 8 months and a lot of false promises from the company that I was in, I just said, I'm jumping. I'm just saying, I want to DJ. This is what I want to do. And I did it. And I just didn't look back. And, you know, here we are. That was, well, gosh, that was 24 years ago. So,
wow. You know. Yeah, I was just wondering about that because I know mom and them sometimes make you want still want to make you go to school, but I didn't mean to cut you off, sir. So what were you about to ask, Mike?
I'm gonna go somewhere else. You killed my thunder. But anyway, no, I'll go back. With all of your employees, do you do any cross-pollination? Are they working on this end but also working over here too in this division?
Yeah, you have to, because especially like our tech people, like if you have TV screens at a wedding, they're the same TV screens you have at a bar mitzvah, which are the same TV screens you have at a corporate event. You just might be doing different things with them. So like a lot of our video techs and a lot of our lighting techs are doing all those things for all different types of events. I have a couple of DJs who only want to do weddings or only want to do mitzvahs or only want to do proms or school things. So like there's some people that want to be, this is what I want to do or I feel comfortable doing. And then there's people who are like, I'll do anything, you know, so teach me. And, you know, a couple of my MCs, they'll MC a wedding on Friday and a mitzvah on Saturday. And they're just, so.
Yeah, that's good. So I know we've kind of touched on the bat and bar mitzvahs. So what is the history of that? How did, you know, you get in it? Get into that market? Was it just by passing out the flyers and different things of that nature, or did somebody walk you through that door?
The mitzvah sector is very hard to get into.
Yes, we know.
It took me a long time. Like I advertised in that Jewish newspaper every week for 6 years. Like, and then they had the big two times a year. They had the big like Simcha extravaganza, which is like the insert that's this thick that just all talks about mitzvahs. So I took a bigger ad out in that. And over time, I just was able to get bookings, and then those led to other bookings and a following. And it, but it took a good 7 to 10 years to be welcomed by the Jewish community, even though I'm Jewish, and even though I had a mitzvah, and even though, you know, I belong to a synagogue. My synagogue was one of the places that, you know, I would do some free stuff for, so people would see me there. I cold called other synagogues and tried saying, hey, I'll do, you know, your Hanukkah event for free just to try to get into there. And, but back in the early 2000s, a lot of the local synagogues also had, mitzvah expos. So they were like a bridal show, but for people who are looking for, entertainment for mitzvah, photographers, video people, all that kind of stuff. So at one point there were close to 15 or 16 synagogues that from January to March had a mitzvah show. So every weekend, every Sunday, I was at a mitzvah show. I'd be out till 3 o'clock in the morning, MCing or DJing a party, get back up and have to be at the other thing at 7 o'clock in the morning because they open those things at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And that led to a lot of mitzvahs as well, because I was one of two DJs there. So if that's who they really were exposed to and had a choice over, then they ended up choosing either me or that person. And it just, that really helped me get into the mitzvah market and really get a nice following.
So how many do you think you do a year now?
Mitzvahs, well, the pandemic has changed some stuff. Before the pandemic, we were probably averaging 4 to 5 mitzvahs a week, you know, every weekend. And wow. Now we're at like the 2 to 3, because during the pandemic, a lot of people found alternatives for mitzvahs. And so they're doing other things now. So it's not as crazy as it once was. And what I also had to find was that during the pandemic, the way people just thought about things and it just changed everything. And we lost almost 2 years of being exposed to kids, because when you do a mitzvah, there's usually 50 kids there. And there's a lot of those kids don't have the entertainment for their mitzvah. So they go home and say, Mom, Dad, I just saw Pulse Entertainment. I want them to do my mitzvah. Well, when you lose 2 years of that, you're going off the reputation you had before, not what's current. So there was a slow ramp up, but now we've kind of hit that 2 to 3 mitzvah thing, and hopefully it'll grow back up. But I, you know, just things have changed, and that's okay. But because weddings are up and corporate's up, and everything kind of goes cyclical. When you're in this business 30 years, you see, you know, ebbs and flows.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I'm gonna throw a curveball. I just thought about. So, have you ever just thought about? Now I'm sitting here listening to you, Ross, as you're speaking, and you're talking about how many events you do with the mitzvahs and so forth. If you just think about how many events take place with DJs, do you ever have the thought that we're gonna run out of parties, we're gonna run out of weddings? We're going to run out of bar mitzvahs. Have you ever just thought about that? And if we run out, what would we do?
You know what? I don't think about it like that. It's funny because a friend of mine was asking me the other day, and he said something like, you know, he's like, you don't, how, you know, when you book, he's like, you don't book everything you talk, everybody you talk to. I said, no, of course not. I said, but there's always more out there, and there's enough for everyone.
Absolutely.
I've always thought that, not the other way where, wow, there's not enough.
Glass half full instead of glass half empty.
But I think about that.
If people stop doing these things, you know, having life moments and celebrating them with music and fun and dancing and all that I would thank God that I also have a corporate division that does corporate AV, because that would be my lifeblood at that point.
Or we'll be out on the street, you know, with a sign, I'll DJ for free.
So do you have a big office warehouse, or are you still making everybody buy their own stuff?
No, you know, after about 5 years, I started buying stuff for everyone and letting them use it. It just made it easier for me because I couldn't control other people's spending. And if they went with cheap speakers and I'm sending them to a nice event, I can't risk that. So I had to, had to control that stuff. So I bought all the speakers, all the mixers, all back then it was the dual Denons and all these kinds of things. You know, it was
the wheels, yes, sir.
Nothing like uniformity.
Right. You know, and everybody had to come to the office, pick that stuff up, and then go to their event, bring it back, and lock up and stuff like that. So now we have about a 4,000 square foot warehouse. I have a couple of offices for the office staff, and I do all my Zoom appointments right from here, so with the nice Pulse sign behind it. And then I I have a handful of vehicles, a couple vans, truck trailers, stuff like that. So I got to a point where I outgrew my garage and then outgrew a storage unit, and I was just like, all right, I need a warehouse. So
were you getting ugly eyes from your wife?
Yeah, very much. That was circa around 2006, 2007, when she started looking at me like, I can't walk through the garage, And I was like, okay. And then we went to a storage unit while I was looking for a warehouse. And it took a while for me to find a really good one that fit my needs, because I need a lot of warehouses don't have office space as well.
Yeah. Well, they got one office.
Right. It's one little room, and then the rest is just warehouse. So this one happened to have four rooms. So I have a conference room. It's funny. I did about $25,000 of renovations in February 2020. Because before the pandemic, a lot of my sales appointments were in person, where people would come to our office.
Yeah.
And since then, I think I've maybe had 10 people show up at this office.
Yeah, I know, because I had an appointment today, and it's very rare that somebody comes in here in this office, but they wanted to come to the office. They wanted to do it in person. So I was like, come on in. Yeah.
I want to show off the floors that I paid so much for.
Bring some more humans in here with us. But yeah, so we're gonna get a little bit into the technical side of this thing. Now Mike got some questions he want to ask.
We have questions.
No, right? Mike has questions.
Oh, I always have questions. So how do you feel? How do you feel about skilled DJs? Is it necessary in your opinion?
I think so. I think anybody, I personally wouldn't send anybody out who's not trained. I think you could teach people the technical things and the basic technical things to get them through an event. It's honestly the reading of a crowd that takes the longest to learn. And, I'm sure you guys have been, when you first started, you play something and you get no response and you're like, oh my gosh, and you have to learn that might not have been the best song to play and why, and you have to reflect on those things.
Crickets.
Exactly. And on the flip side, when you play a song and you're like, wow, it's a banger and everybody's going crazy, you're like, yeah, I got this, and it builds the confidence. But I think a skilled person, I think they have to be proficient in the basic things. Some people think beat mixing is basic. Some people don't. I think I think you can get by without it if you do it the right way. If you have an MC, like at mitzvahs, for instance, a lot of mitzvahs are MC driven and the MC's talking a lot, and we're doing follow along dances where it's, hey, follow me. Hey, do what I'm doing. So you can make a transition without a beat mix because the MC is pretty much talking over it. Mm-hmm. However, most weddings, other types of events, they're expecting the beat mixing. Our proms are expecting the beat mixing. So I believe that you have to have the basic skills to get through events, the technical skills to get through events. I think it's definitely necessary. It's how far you want to take it. Like, I'm old school. I started a long time ago. Like, I don't use a lot of effects. Some of my guys use the horn and use this, and I'm like, what's that? I don't use a crossfader. I was not taught to use the crossfader. I was taught to mix with both volumes up, and that's how you mix. Or you mix with one volume down, and once you get the beat, you bring the volume up, and then you let them play it, and then you bring the volume down, and
that's. But you know what? That way is almost better, because if the other song is much louder, you always get it right instead of one the other one coming in so loud. So that's kind of a better way to do it. But
that's how I was taught. Yeah,
either way is good. I do it both ways, but I always listen in my headphones and I can tell on the meters or either in my ear if something is really louder than the other one. So yeah. But
you know, but that's the kind of thing, like a lot of my guys use the crossfader, and I'm not gonna say that that's a bad thing. I'm just like, okay, do it. Yeah. Like whatever if you have the technical skills to do certain things and use your effects and do stuff like that, fine. Just don't, all of my people, whenever I'm training MCs, DJs, I said, I need you to do it my style, because Pulse Entertainment is my style, with your own flair. So keep within the program, but feel free to put your stamp on it, because you'll stand out when somebody's at the event and when somebody calls and says, hey, I just saw so-and-so. It's because you did something right and you stood out enough that they remembered your name or whatever. So
this is a question for both of you guys. So if tomorrow came and you look, you know, on your phone and the news flash and they said a bill is being passed for SOPs in the DJ industry and we need your vote, would you vote yay or nay?
For standard operating procedures?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, yeah, I'm advocate.
No, I'm just asking because
I'm an advocate for certification and know-how and all of that. But you don't even have to ask me that. Now you need to ask Mr. Askerod what he said, not me.
You know what? I would probably agree with that, because I think, you know, one of the things that I think is difficult when you're in the DJ business is, you know, I charge a premium for my experience, my equipment, my insurance. Like, I do everything right, you know. And then, you know, so let's say I'm charging $2,500 for a wedding. And then there's always the guy who charges $350 or $400. And I think standard operating procedures would bring that all so that we're at a more premium dollar and considered to be a professional. Because a lot of the times, unfortunately, I think in this business, the general public views us as we spin music.
Yeah.
You know, that's all you do, or you just push play, you know, and that's not the case. For a lot of us, we do a lot more than just push play.
A lot more than just. You know?
I think standard operating procedures would elevate everybody to a certain level where they felt, hey, I put in the time, I've become certified or whatever. So I believe I should be charging that same premium that everybody else is charging. Because I think we do ourselves a disservice when you have true professionals being compared to, hey, I like to spin on the weekend. And it's not something I really take seriously. I just play music. But people equate us as the same thing, unfortunately, a lot. So I think SOP would be good.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I just, you know, it's, our industry is a beautiful industry, but there are so many defects that get rewarded instead of called out. And sometimes when you stand up against something that should change, everybody wants you to sit down. And in my opinion, it's because nobody wants to change.
Or willing to put in the work to get better at what they should be doing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Oh. Well, all you do is spin records. you think you is, huh? DJ Quick. Yes, burn back. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. Question. I read this in the Bible. So you said you've got to work with a lot of big acts like Salt and Pepper, the Temps, and all. Is that, what does that come from, the production side?
It's a little bit of the production side. I also had a really great relationship with a local radio station. They would hire us to do events because their street team was not qualified to do events. They would come out and their one street team person would hand out, you know, branded stuff.
Yeah.
We're the ones actually DJing and we're the ones actually entertaining everybody. So that relationship yielded a lot of opportunities with more of the popular artists like the Justin Bieber back in the day. It was like Jay Sean and Jason Derulo and they were all really great to work with, because of those relationships and stuff like that. The all-time people like the Temptations, Kool and the Gang, the Tramps and Tavares, those guys, we have a local health club around here, and the guy is like loves to make a splash. So like every few years he would have this huge party, and back in the early 2000s and stuff like that, he would bring in a huge act like the Temptations and Kool and the Gang and stuff like that.
Just bring in the Temptations or Kool.
Yeah, he brought them in, and he would sell tickets for like $300 a pop because you got dinner with it and whatever. And it would sell out, and I would DJ before the act went on. I would introduce the act and then also DJ afterwards, because they're not playing for a 5-hour event. They're doing like their 1-hour set or whatever of their
hits. They're coming in, getting their money and getting out. Right.
Yeah, they're doing their hits and then they're out. So we're the ones who provided the lighting and the sound and all that stuff. And then they just show up with all their personal instruments or whatever. And then, you know, it was really cool to introduce the Temptations. Like I get out there and I'm young at the time. This was like 20 years ago. You know, I'm in my 20s, and you know, people don't think I know the Temptations because I'm in my 20s, right? You know, look at me, right? But I've been DJing for such a long time at that point. I love the Temptations. And so I'm like, I'm giddy when I met them and shook their hands. And I get out there and I'm like, yeah, this is such a huge honor for me. You know, like I was like gushing over them. And I was like, give it up for the Temptations. It was just like,
the mighty, mighty Temptations.
If they had cell phones that took like really good.
I know, man. That's
time. I would just say the
same thing, because we missed so many moments in life and the things that we got to do because we didn't have
some way of capturing.
Yeah, like we do now. Because boy, yeah. And then it's probably a good thing some of us didn't have cell phones too. But that's for another story.
Well, this one is on you, Jeff.
What's this one? Oh, what is one of your proudest moments in the DJ industry? Would it be the Temps, or would it be something else, or what have you done that has really just made you just?
You know, those were great, and those are definitely career highlights. But like when I look at the DJ industry, that's not necessarily a part of the DJ industry as much. Honestly, when I performed for DJ of the Year, it went way back, DJ Expo, this was 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, around that area. Mm-hmm. It was cool because I felt like, you know, I was being recognized, you know, for what I was doing. And then that transitioned me to being an educator. And so I went from that, like I won Game of the Year, like 3 years in a row, because I came up with new games for people to play. I was always, you know, always had cool new dances and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, this is kind of neat sharing. I got a call from a DJ in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just played that game that you taught at the DJX, and it was amazing. The kids went crazy, and I was like, there's somebody in Seattle doing a game that I invented. That blew my mind more than anything, you know, like, and so that prompted me to being more of an educator and, you know, teaching people. And for the last like 10 years or so, I've been teaching it at MEX, PBX, and the DJX, and all those things, doing seminar after seminar. And I get more recognized for that now than I do anything. Is that, you know, I get recognized for, hey, that thing you taught me last year, I used that and it worked. And to me, that's the proudest stuff for me, because it's also a good way for me to pass on my knowledge a lot. I mean, I'm 46, but I've been doing this for 35 years.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of people that are still, I like to consider myself in my prime, but, you know, also have 35 years of experience. And
that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So just a couple. So I guess, I don't know if you read anything about us, but, you know, that's half of our story right there. What are we, you know, we're trying to give back to the industry. We want to have it better than what we found it. I see you already pretty much preaching the same song we did. So I know you had a great mentor, but did you run into anybody who would not tell you what a record was and all of that as you're going through? And you know, why do they do us like that? Because, I mean, you know, now, of course, you can Shazam it, but why was it so like that back then? I mean, it's
still... Well, was it like that when you started?
Well, you know, it's funny because when I started, the guy I worked for, when we were done our event, we would meet up with his DJ buddies, who all owned separate companies, and we would meet up at the diner at like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. I'd have a grilled cheese, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old, right? I'm having a grilled cheese surprise, right? And we would just sit there for 2 or 3 hours just talking about our parties, what's going on, like ideas and stuff like that. And it was very, you know, a lot of camaraderie. By the time I opened up my company, I was all of a sudden the enemy. Like, nobody wanted to talk to me. I reached out to people that I knew and was like, hey, do you want to partner up? Like, if I have an extra event, do you want it? And like, you know, I'm always looking for things. There was only one other guy who would throw me work. And everybody else was like, your competition,
Oh, wow.
You know, and then it evolved to the, when they see you at a DJ expo or they see you at a bridal show or they see you at a mitzvah show back then, hey, how you doing? You guys are awesome. I always love running into you, blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as you turn away, I hate them guys. And you're just like, and you can hear it. You can hear it. Like, and all of a sudden became like a lot of animosity. And about 10 years ago, I really made an effort to really like reach out to people and say, listen, I'm here. If you want help, I am here. Wow. You know, I took them to lunch. I tried to build a relationship and I said, listen, if you're not interested in having at least a friendship, then don't come to lunch. But what I figured out is that the more friends you have, more help you have.
Yeah.
Even
if they don't want to help you work for you, you still can be friends.
Right. And you know, most of the people I associate with, we throw work back and forth. I might grab a DJ because one of my DJs isn't available. I have the MC, but I need a DJ. They'll give me their DJ. Then the next week they'll need an MC for something. And hey, we're all here to do events. We could be rude and be competitive and not share. You know, I have hundreds of uplights sitting in my warehouse. There happened to be one night I was 30 short. I had overbooked by 30 and I didn't know. So I called my friend. I said, hey, listen, do you have 30 uplights I can either rent or he just let me borrow them. He didn't even charge me for them because I had helped him out on 3 other things. So it's better to have friends now than it is to have enemies. And back in the day, it was very much animosity, but at least the people I'm surrounding myself with now are like-minded and just want to, you know, get through each weekend. Like, all right, let me get to the next weekend.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, we had a question. I'm going to comment. Seth said he does 4 charity events a year at no cost. My question is, what is the purpose of doing those charity events for you? Is that your way of giving back? And are you giving back to the industry or are you just giving back to those that don't have the means to pay for a skilled DJ?
Well, for the first, I'd say 20 years that I was doing this, I did a lot of freebies. I was a sucker. Like, I'll be honest with you. I was, hi, I'm with the American Cancer Society. We need a DJ. Would you donate it? Sure. Hey, I'm with the March of Dimes. Would you donate a DJ? Sure. And all of a sudden, it was, you know, it was getting to a point where I was spending so much money to do those free events by paying my people that it was actually costing me a lot more if I would have just done it a whole different way. Like if I would have just bought an ad or something like that, or just made a donation or whatever. So I changed my philosophy. And I really try to, anybody that calls me for a charity event, I try to partner with them and say, listen, if you give them a great time and actually invest in your entertainment and the time that they had, you're going to get more in donations than I would ever be able to give you by donating a DJ.
Yeah.
I said, So a lot of them will actually hire us now to do the event and pay us because we know they know that they're going to make more by having quality entertainment and quality people there. Now, there's still a handful of organizations that, like one of my dancers about 10 years ago was diagnosed with leukemia. So we did a huge thing for her. She's in remission and it worked out very well, but I still support that organization. But at least now I get to pick and choose what I want to do and how I want to help. But I also, like my kids' school, for instance, they call me all the time for donations. I don't charge them because these schools have no money. You know, they have nothing. So I have a whole thing. I mean, at least my kids' elementary school has no money.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I have a whole set of carnival games and a carnival tent just sitting in my warehouse. They could be used this weekend and make hundreds of kids happy, or I can say, you have to pay me for them.
Yeah.
So I usually say, hey, if you want to pick them up, I will be glad to donate them. And so I kind of pick and choose the things I want to do. I usually just, that's my way of kind of taking care of people where I can. And not only taking care of fellow DJs, I have a lot of people that ask to borrow stuff, a lot of people that ask to rent stuff. And sometimes I don't even make them rent. I'll just lend out because I know that when I'm in a pinch, I'm going to need their help. And they're more likely to say, yeah, I'll give you a hand.
Okay. So when you see this statement, it means
go birds.
As you notice in the background back
there. Yeah, I saw that.
I didn't see it back there.
Yeah, it was.
That's one of my prized possessions right there. It's a signed autograph, Brandon Graham, while he's sacking Tom Brady in the Super Bowl photo. So that is like one of my all times right there. And then obviously I have my Eagles stuff over there. I'm originally from Pittsburgh. My dad's side is from Pittsburgh. So the baseball on the right is the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates. My favorite ball player growing up, Ken Griffey Jr., that's a signed baseball from him.
Wow.
And then growing up, it was Superman and Star Wars for me. So I got my R2-D2 and my Mandalorian stuff over here. And then that's my General Zod from Superman 2 over there. So I feel like you have to have a little bit of your personality. I can't tell you. I was doing a Zoom with a client the other day, and she's like, is that Brandon Graham sacking Tom Brady? I said, yeah, and it's signed. She's like, wow, you just went to the top of my list of people I'm finding. I'm like, so, all right.
Are you all Philadelphia sports fans? Are you a Phillies fan too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Before we were hopped on here, Bryce Harper just hit 2 home runs, and I'm watching that. And I have a split screen with Joel Embiid, who just came back tonight too. So I'm like,
oh, he's playing tonight?
Yeah,
he's
back. I'm like, oh, gosh, which one are we going to watch?
Wow.
True sports fan. I love it.
Wow.
I love it.
Your family that's back in Pittsburgh, are they mad at you that you're not a Steeler?
No, because they my dad's side is still heavy Steelers fans, so I appreciate them. It's not like I don't, you know, I have anything bad or any ill will towards them. I just am an Eagles fan first. But, you know, it's funny because, like, when I was a kid, though, growing up in Pittsburgh before we moved to Philadelphia, I had met Mario Lemieux from the Pittsburgh Penguins. So he always became my hero. When I played roller hockey and ice hockey growing up, he was always number 66.
Yeah.
And I have a signed Lemieux jersey right over here because that's just like, so I have some personal connections still there too. If you were to look around my office, you would see Eagles, Mario Lemieux, Superman stuff all the way around. And then I have my newest collection thing, which is my Karate Kid signed Ralph Macchio.
Oh, not Ralph. No.
William Zabka train photo right over here. So.
Wow.
So how do you feel about y'all new running back?
I love it. Love it. I'll tell you, you know what? I don't get all hyped up with like free agent signings and stuff like that. But I was excited. I'll be honest with you. I don't like the fact that we just lost Hassan Reddick, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I trust the process. That's like the Philly motto the last 10 years. I trust the process. And most of the time they're good. Most of the time they're good. So I'm going to trust again, and we'll find out in the first little bit of the season. So I used to get really upset. Before they won the Super Bowl, I used to get really upset. Like, why aren't they doing anything? Why aren't they signing people? Why aren't they doing it?
Yeah.
After the Super Bowl, I've become a little more chill. And
we all come a little chill when we get that trophy to look at that we actually
what do you got planned? What do you got brewing over here?
Y'all have some mean fans down there.
You know what? I will say that's that's overblown. We're not mean. We're passionate.
That's
bad here, though. I mean, they're pretty bad at Cowboys Stadium, too. Trust me.
I've been at a Cowboys Philly game where the Philly fans came here.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, man, why are they here?
Because they came to see their team play.
And you won't ever see that the other way. Because Cowboy fans would not
feel.
Would not come into the Philly Stadium.
Yeah. See, that's why he just answered my. You see how he answered my question.
Yeah, he came back around. Did you ask this already? What are some things you're doing to give back to the industry?
Yeah. See.
Oh, you did. Okay. Yeah, we did. My bad. All right. Here's our favorite question of the night. What is a gem that you're willing to leave with us about? You know, like. That you would tell the industry or something you might close one of your teachings with or one of your seminars.
Okay. For on the spot asking that question, I would say.
Well, we ain't going to send you the questions ahead of time. Come on.
This is something I probably would have liked to think about. I would say that never stop learning. I am 35 years in this business. And I pick the brain of all my people all the time. You know, if somebody has a good idea, I'm not too proud to implement that idea. If they have a new mix, I'm not too proud to say, hey, give me the mix and I'll use the mix. Like,
hit us with the temptations. He's right on it.
you have to keep learning because. I always joke. I said the second I stop learning, the second I should retire, because it's at that point it's not a passionate thing or a love anymore. It's a job. And yes, this is a job, but I love doing this. I love events. I love producing events. I love doing events. That's always been my thing since 35 years ago. And it's because I've reinvented myself 100 million times throughout the whole process. If you're constantly learning and reinventing yourself, and it becomes a really worthwhile experience. Like, I'm always thinking of what's next and how I can do things. And I'm actually thinking of bringing some old stuff back because I think it could really work. And I'm like, you know what? I'm always just thinking about things and what I can do to be better and what I can do to make my company better and my staff better. So I would say it's definitely to keep learning. And just bettering yourself in all aspects. If there was something else, it's know who you are, and that's, one of the seminars I taught a while ago was, who are you? Are you a DJ? Are you a MC? Are you a DJ and an MC? Or are you a DJ business owner? Because you have to know who you are, because there's some people out there that are just DJs and they just like to play music and they're okay working for other people. There's other people that are in the DJ business to make this a career and to make this a thing that puts food on the table for their family. And so you have to know who you are and who you want to be or become in order to set yourself on the right path. Because I see when I've done some consultations for DJs across the country every now and then, and the first thing I ask them is, who are you? Like, are you a DJ business owner? Because if you're a DJ business owner, you're a business owner first, DJ second. If you're a DJ, you're a DJ first, and there's no business. So you can't be a DJ first if you're a business owner, because it just doesn't work. You're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to grow anywhere. You have to have the vision of a business owner to set you on that path where you can do what you love, which is DJ. You know, if you're just a DJ, you can't go on that same path. So I'm a big believer in who are you. And once you figure that out, you can take the path that's works for you.
So do you ask your guys that, or what do you want to do, or do they?
Yeah. Do oftentimes, when I run interviews for new talent, I get a lot of people who say, oh, I've been DJ. I've had my own DJ thing for a while. Well, are you a business owner, or are you, do you feel comfortable working for somebody else? Because a lot of business owners don't feel comfortable working for somebody else because they're used to how they do it. And they're not necessarily willing to mold to what I want to do. And like what I was saying before, this is the Pulse way with your flair. They're more like, oh, I'm going to continue doing what I do for my own company. And that doesn't jive with my brand.
Okay.
So I have to kind of weed them out and say, listen, you know, you're not a fit for me. Or, you know, when I'm hiring, I'm looking for people who don't want to have the pressure to have insurance and have buy equipment and have all these things, but they really love to DJ and they really love playing music and making people happy and doing events.
I have to say now, a lot of they do want all of that, but they don't want to do the things to have all of that. They don't want to pay for a website. They don't want to pay for insurance. They don't want to do this, but they do want to do that. So really and truly, they're kind of lying to themselves because you're not putting yourself in a position to win. You're just doing something.
And that's what it is.
Okay.
You can kind of tell pretty early into like interviews some nowadays where it's like, this guy is kind of floating from place to place.
Mm-hmm. You
know? And there's a reason he's floating from place to place. So he's probably not good for me. And yep. You could kind of tell those things earlier, and that's definitely key to knowing who you are.
Yeah. So what were you about to say, Mike?
I said it all depends on who you're dealing with, because some people are that type that they don't want to do all of the horror stuff. They just want to go DJ and play music. And then you have those that they do inspire, you know, to be something greater. And they eventually get there. Then you have those that want to be greater, but they're lazy as hell.
Well, that's not what you want. You're lying to yourself because you're not willing to put in the work.
Well, it goes back to something that he said.
What?
Know who you are.
Yeah, but that's
a lot of them don't know who they are, so they chase faith. Yeah, yeah. They're chasing after something that they'll never get because that's not for them, because that's not who they are.
Yeah. I mean,
I found that out really quickly when I was telling you earlier, when I quit that 9-to-5 job, that first day that I quit, it was up to me to get up and make calls and follow up on leads.
Oh yeah.
All that stuff, because otherwise my bills weren't being paid and you know, food wasn't being put on my table. So I knew when I quit who I was, and that was the business owner trying to make money and trying to grow my business.
I knew you would bring me back to this question. So what does mom think now?
Oh, my mom is the proudest mom in the world. And I'll be honest with you, all my brothers work for me. I have four brothers.
Oh,
all of them have worked for me at one point. Two of them still work for me. And it's because they love to DJ still. Like
all you guys are DJs?
Are you the oldest?
Yeah. Oh, they like all four of my brothers were my DJs and then went off and started doing their own events for my company for forever, ever since I opened. And two of them retired because one of them moved farther away and the other one went into the military. But then I have my two other brothers that still work for me. And it's not that they do it for the money, because they both have really nice during the week jobs. They do it because they love to DJ and they love to have fun. So my mom, and here's quick side note. My best friend in high school when I opened up my company was my first dancer at for mitzvahs. And, and she's my wife.
Oh, she's my wife. Okay, I got wow.
So like it's been a family affair from the very beginning. You know, when I first opened up the company, it was me and my brother Eric. I was the MC, he was the DJ.
So five of y'all can DJ. Five before y'all.
And now my kids work for me. I have two of my three kids work for me. My one kid is an amazing lighting designer and is now doing video mapping. And the other kid is like a photo booth, loves doing the photo booth.
Well, you know, I have to make this statement. Either you are a great teacher or you're very persuasive.
I like to think it's the first one.
That is too cool. Wow, man.
It's one of the two.
But I do know how to sell.
Yeah. Hey.
Man, I'm so glad my man Jock sent you our way, because we like talking to, I won't say you're not known, but gems that are out there that are going to shine a light that probably would, we never would have talked to if it wouldn't have been for other people introducing. Man, that is pretty cool. So, wow.
Wow. Yeah. Man. That is. Wow. So, are you the oldest?
I am the oldest.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay. So, yeah. All right. See, that's what a persuasion
is. Man, that is too cool.
Hey, you're going to work for me or you're not going to work at all?
Well, it worked out because none of them had money issues when they were, they went to college and they all had money. They were able to use the money they made from here to put themselves through college. They were able to use that money. Now they use it, one of my brothers takes every dollar that he makes from me every year, stashes it aside and goes on a vacation with his family. it serves a purpose, yes, but they do it for the love of DJing, but it also serves a purpose. It made their lives easier from the time they started working with me at an early age, even until now, because it's still paying off in all sorts of ways.
What do they do mostly? Bar mitzvahs or
my two brothers can do any type of events. So they can do weddings, mitzvahs, corporate, schools, whatever. Like this weekend, I have one brother doing a mitzvah and the other brother's doing a prom. So,
That is too cool.
I'm just saying the great thing about it is you have people that you know you can trust.
Yeah, and a lot of families can't work together. Have you ever had to fire one of them?
No, because of anything my brothers got from the very beginning, they knew my style. Like they were pretty much raised in my style. They knew what it was. So they're the ones when I'm not at an event, because I can't be everywhere, they're the ones who are like, we got to do it this way. They keep the pulse way going, and they'll call out people at events saying, listen, we don't do that here.
Great. You got bodyguards out there. You got
You have to protect your brand, and who better than your family? But anybody I hire, honestly, really becomes part of this family. My general manager, Cole, he has been here since 2008. Wow. And I always tell people, I don't lose people because I don't treat them well and I don't pay them well. And I don't lose people like that. I lose people because they retire. They just want to be done. that's all but two employees over 35 years have all just said, listen, I'll finish out my parties and I'm just going to focus on something else. One of my girl MCs had a baby and she's like, I'm going to finish out the two parties and then I'm just going to have family time. Yeah. Fantastic. And I was invited to the kids' birthday party and, I'm invited to all their weddings and stuff like that, because it becomes really like family. A lot of my dancers and DJs look at me like as the big brother, and stuff like that. So they'll it's funny. I was reminiscing with one of my dancers who no longer works for us, but she's now 32 years old. I knew her when she was 13 and I did her bat mitzvah. And then she started dancing for me two years later. And I've been through all of her life moments for the past, 20 years almost. And she's like, whenever I see her, she's like, hey, big bro, and that's how it's really become,
Man. So, hey, when you rewatch this, make sure you ask yourself that question, who are you?
Yeah. And we're going to start referring you as the Godfather.
Yeah. Did you watch Suits?
I love Suits.
I'm sure you did. Bobby Axelrod.
My wife was watching it before I left to come back.
That was one of my favorite shows this summer. But hey, brother, we really want to thank you for taking this hour out your day and your family time and all that good stuff and just jumping on with us. And we can't wait to meet you in person somewhere at a conference. We're gonna definitely keep in contact so we can hook up and sit down and break bread and have a drink or two together somewhere.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me, guys. I really
appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you, sir. Have a good evening.
You too.